At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
It is May 17th, 2021. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. That was, guys, I'm good calling it a day if you guys are.
Kevin, what are you doing to yourself?
That was like a perfect one.
Jameson's?
It's the Caskmates, the Stout Edition. It's pretty solid. Oh. It's not bad. Yeah.
Oh, thank you guys for joining us on this lovely Monday evening without rain in the Atlanta area for the first time in what seems like forever. I am Tim Herb. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Dan James, and Mr. Kevin Bradley, the last but not least in the middle.
Later.
I just wanted to see how you would react to that, Kevin. I know you kept talking about getting third billing, which has never been a thing. So I needed to test your mettle with that. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us live on YouTube. If you guys are watching on YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope, thank you. And if you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure you guys hit the subscribe button, notification bell icon. If you guys aren't already subscribed, you'll know whenever we go live. You can join us for this little fun thing we call the trap and the fake trap now that we are broadcasting to all three of those platforms.
Yeah. Thanks, lots of familiar faces. Chiefs coach Steve, Elliot Beaven, Richard Gordon, Brian, Michelle, Dirty Bird Person. Yeah. Thanks for showing up. It'd be great.
I think Dirty Bird Person's first comment in the trap tonight kind of epitomizes the entirety of the weekend for all Atlanta United fans. And I'm going to quote him and say, this game is really dull and uninspired. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. The death soccer is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not just the Atlanta United game, but yesterday, Alisson scoring that header to keep fourth place hopes alive for Liverpool was pretty crazy.
It's finally earned that $50 million transfer fee, right?
Oh yeah, because a league title and a Champions League trophy definitely didn't do that. So
this is awkward.
Yeah, couple other familiar names in the trap. Gabe Lajas joining us. Nathan Explosion of Metalocalypse fame joining us. It was Saturday night. That was pretty interesting. I will say, I am very happy and surprised that. We were staying, we went and saw my parents for the first time in a year and a half, which was incredible. We went to, if you guys have ever heard of this place, I would be shocked. Anybody in the trap or anybody Arby's? Listening. Yes, Arby's. We stayed in an Arby's. We got an Airbnbs. We went to Airbnbs and we booked a room there. No, we went to
Airbnbs. It's an Airbnb.
There's so many possibilities, so many crossover possibilities. How have inspired brands?
Okay, if you have to rate like over short term rentals as Arby's menu items, what would not?
Oh dear God! Oh, but we stayed in a place called Reform, Alabama, and they had the game. It was on with a little farmhouse playing on Bally Sports Southeast. It was pretty fantastic being able to watch the game. It was. Gosh, so many emotions.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. I really wish I had the sound bite from last week's episode whenever I go. Two people that I think really need to be criticized in Moreno and oh my God.
Mulroney.
Mulroney. Let's talk about how their performance has been. They end up linking up to win the game Saturday. So that was a befitting thing. You know, I think really my favorite thing that came out of this weekend was the fact that it didn't go nil-nil, so Tim remains pointless on the season.
Yes, I am playing the long game. If nothing else, I am playing the long game here, and it's I'm gonna win. I'm gonna crawl out of this hole.
It's getting deeper.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
Yeah, this is. You've got
about as much a chance of this as Chicago Fire does at this point, five games in with 1 point on there. But you have less points than Chicago Fire has this far into the season.
Yeah.
You minus points here, Tim?
Is that what we decided last week? If it's like spades, I'll go negative if I bid nil. Okay. Exactly. I guess I'm negative this time, guys. Good God. You know what? I'm happy to be wrong week in, week out if we win. Like, yeah. I don't know. I get in my head about these things because I'm constantly like, okay, well, I predict a win every single time. I'm just a homer. I don't really know what I'm doing. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be a contrarian. I'm going to go against Atlanta United here. I'm going to say we're not going to get all 3 points, and then we get all 3 points. I'm just reverse psychology. I'm like I'm the reverse Eric Quintana.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm going to call it that.
We'll keep it up, Tim. We need as many points as we can get.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear your prediction this week considering the opponent this weekend.
Are we going double digits?
Yeah, probably against us at this point.
Yeah. It's going to be, yeah, I'm not looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah,
for sure. We have El Roctavio in the fake trap on Periscope. Octavio Mingura, our buddy, a normal face in the trap. He said, "Honestly, we shouldn't have won this match, and I can't disagree."
Yeah,
it seemed very fairly evenly matched in the fact that there was not anything going on for the most part during the game. And
it was just back to the Atlanta that we have all come to see over recent weeks and certainly over the last couple of years, which is just possession for the sake of possession. And some of that is because of the way that Montreal approached the game too. But overall, I mean, side note, I just want to make a point about how great Moadu has been in the call box for Atlanta United. And I thought that him with Kevin Egan week in and week out has been really great. But this week in particular, you know, it's rare that you hear a broadcaster kind of be critical of the way the team is playing or what they're lacking in their run of play. And I really thought that his commentary this week in particular, where it wasn't like Atlanta was losing, but there was certainly something left wanting by all spectators involved. And he hit the nail on the head at multiple times throughout the broadcast about what he thought should have been happening during the run of play. And hats off to him for that.
Yeah, I like him a lot better than Dan Gargan, to be quite honest. I think he's more fluid. He talks his mind. I feel like he gives a better perspective on the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting because he played at a higher level for longer than Dan Gargan, I would say. Not to discredit what Dan Gargan did in MLS, but Moadu played overseas. He did captain Stoke at one point and captaining Rangers, right? And playing, you know.
I think so. I just remember him. He was a highly billed kid, and I don't think he ever lived up to his full potential.
Ooh, it sounds like Michelle disagrees. I'm interested to hear why.
So Michelle disagrees about Moadu? No, I do like your point about him being impartial, because that is I think color commentators more often than not, and I think it might have to do with the short history of the club so far, that we don't have a player. Like, it's not like Michael Parkhurst is sitting in that seat.
Right.
It's like, you know, watching any other sports, you know, regional broadcast. Oh, Michelle says she loves Moadu. She must be thinking about something else.
Dirty bird person saying, "You're thinking Freddie Adu." And yeah, yes. I'm actually right thinking that. So I don't know anything about US M&T soccer.
No. Mo Adu had a great career. And he was a fantastic midfielder. But in terms of the impartiality, I think that's such a great quality, and it's unexpected watching so many other sports and their local broadcasts that have homers essentially that played for the team, and they're constantly going to be going, going in favor of their team. But I mean, Dan Gargan wasn't an Atlanta United player. He was brought over. I think he played most of his career at LA Galaxy, if I'm not mistaken. And he was not as critical at the times it needed to be, probably. But I agree. I think Mo Adu's color commentating alongside Kevin Egan's amazing. I hope we never lose Kevin Egan. I think he's fantastic. Yeah. And then nothing makes me feel more self-assured about our broadcast choice than to listen to Inter Miami's regional broadcast choice. I cannot stand listening to Ray Hudson. I know he's like this legendary guy, but it's Ray Hudson, right? That does the color commentary for Miami.
I don't know.
It's the worst. Whatever it is. I'm pretty sure it's Ray Hudson.
Is he the guy who it sounds like every time he says a sentence, he's inhaling, but you never hear him exhale? It's like, oh, yep, he's coming up to the ball.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, he's going to take a
probably
shot.
Probably him, yeah.
It's like, dude, breathe out, man. Breathe out. I can't stand it.
Yeah. Michelle says she disagrees with mine and Kevin's perception of the game. I don't know what Dan hasn't really weighed in on his thoughts about the game in general on Saturday.
So again, I didn't watch it live, so I didn't have all the emotion tied behind it. I watched it afterwards. And I guess partly because I know the end of I know the score, obviously, because I'm following that live. I feel like I can just sit and watch the game and kind of be entertained. I didn't think it was horrible. I thought that we potentially should have, like, coming into the game, I felt like we should have done a lot better than we actually did. But there were a couple of interesting moments. Like, I thought, oh my gosh, I thought everyone was going to crucify Marino after the game, but thankfully he got the goal. But I didn't think he was that bad. I feel like, again, it's just time and chemistry between the guys that are going to sort some of these things out. I thought he had a couple of through balls that just were to people who were out of position. And also, like, I mean, I thought Hyman played pretty good too. I mean, he had the disallowed goal, which was a great piece of soccer, which was purely needed. And we haven't seen someone just storming into the box and rocketing a shot right into the net.
But he's one of the only people taking shots outside the box right now too.
Right.
Heinemann, you know.
And then he had he had that rip from the top of the 18 that went wide. And the keeper was beaten.
And like, he didn't even move on it. Yeah.
Right. So he's been a good ray of light. I just feel like people just want, they want 2017-2018 Atlanta United. That's what people want. And we're frustrated that we haven't got it because we've won an MLS Cup, and now success is measured on the next MLS Cup. That's going to be the truly successful piece, I feel like. But if we're not scoring 4-0 a game, you know, 4 goals a game, then we're not going to be the darling that everybody's looking for us to be.
That's not my expectation personally. I mean, Tim, is that yours? I don't think either of us are clamoring for Atlanta to be.
I mean, we haven't gotten to positives and negatives yet. My negative is that we won 1-0 and we didn't lose 3-4. You know what I mean? Like, I would have rather lost 3-4 on Saturday, you know? Joga Bonito, the beautiful game. You know what I mean? No, it's a rebuilding project. That's the thing, right? Like, it shouldn't have ever been a rebuilding project. But in MLS, maybe that's the expectation we should have when we're not a team like Seattle yet, or a team like Portland, or a team like, who else would be in that vein? Even LA Galaxy. I mean, they have years where they're downtrodden, but they're almost always a powerhouse in some capacity and contenders to win their conference. I honestly, I don't have any sort of outlandish expectations for what we can achieve this year. But that said, I feel like the East is pretty wide open. I think Columbus probably, I don't know where they sit in the standings right now. Are they in first?
They are mid table.
No.
Oh, okay. So. That's what I figured. And they'll right the ship. You know, Caleb Porter's an amazing coach. You have Darlington Nagbe and the like in that team. I think eventually, and they're coming off of a hangover from winning the title, but I think the East is pretty wide open. I mean, you have players leaving, key players that left early on in the season. And, you know, look at Brendan Aaronson's departure from Philly. I know that hasn't played that huge of a role yet, but yeah, I don't know. I don't have unrealistic expectations. I think I just want to see the team get better week by week.
And I think that's, generally speaking, I think we're seeing that. I think so. You've got Octavio Mungura's comment tagged up there. To the team's credit, this was the first match where we didn't run out of gas and drop a match. I mean, we didn't have to deal with Champions League. So, yeah. You know, you expect the guys to have a little bit more energy and put more effort. And I think we did. I think we put the same amount of effort in. We just had more stamina to pull on in order to finish out the game.
I just feel like the team didn't. I mean, they had more stamina because they didn't play that they were playing in those first couple of weeks in Champions League. Right. Like the team that played those first two or three weeks in Champions League has not been present the past couple of weeks in play. It's been a mindful transition into possession-based tactics, which I agree that there was a lot of development over this past week. And certainly, like, even if it's 0-0, it's better than a 3-0 drubbing of Atlanta United. But at the same time, like, I think it's just frustrating. The people that were frustrated, and my personal frustration, was that there was so much opportunity that the players were just, like, whatever mentality or whatever tactic went into that match had gotten so embedded in the run of play up until stoppage time. Like, if Atlanta had, I'm not expecting for those 5 minutes to be for the full 95 minutes, but at least, like, show me spurts of that throughout the game. Like, it just got so repetitive where there were times where I was just like, come the fuck on. Like, every time the ball gets passed in open space, you're going to still pass it back towards the back line. You're not even going to take a turn. Or you take a turn and you've got 20 yards until the next midfielder and you're still just going to play a lateral pass. Like, it's those kinds of things that get to be a little frustrating, because if you're not doing those things, and that's what, again, I just love that Moadu was able to capitalize on that in the broadcast, where it's like, you have to do that to start to draw your opponent out of position, to open up those lanes, to build into some offensive playmaking ability. And that's sort of the next step that I'm hoping Atlanta gets to. And I just don't know when that happens. And a lot of that is Barco being out, Hosetu, who's now back in the lineup, but not playing, a lot of other factors. But overall, over the course of the match, I joked on Twitter saying I thought that Atlanta's attacking arrows were all going to be pointed back towards our own goal more than they were towards the other end of the field, because that's where most of the passes seem to go.
Yeah, it seems like we're an easy team to defend against, because you just put a little bit of pressure on them.
A little bit of pressure.
Yeah. And it's going back. Like, last week, I think Bello, I think probably like 80% of his passes were backwards. Yep. And it is frustrating. Like, they get that little bit of pressure on the wings, because that's supposed to be where we're strongest. And it just goes back and back and back. But
For Lennon. Lennon is the only person that seems to just take the ball up and then do something with it, it seems like.
I mean, he was on the receiving end of a couple of bombs, I think, there's been a bunch from Sosa, Hyman. I think Moreno's even put some in there, and he's bombing down the field. But you want to see that from Bello as well. Playing these guys as more of wing backs, which I think we're doing, as it seemed like we were just playing three in the back again. You really want to push them forward and really get up the field, and come on, let's have someone for them to pass to right there, rather than having to wait a little bit for someone to catch up and be present. So
it's a balancing act, because the other side of that is what Atlanta was getting exposed on the first couple of weeks of the year, where it was like they were too heavy-handed in the attack and the back line got pulled so far out of position that Sosa was run ragged having to cover, and Bello wasn't tracking back and didn't have extra coverage, and the back line was getting exposed. So it's like, We just need to get those two things in sync, at least for a proportionate amount of the game on both sides of the ball. Tim, what do you think?
Yes. No. No, I agree. It is a little frustrating. It's fun sometimes to watch pass around, but at the same time, like to see, because there's something I think to be said to be able to keep. If you look at touches, we had 814 to their 536 touches on Saturday. It's crazy. Like the amount of possession and the amount of, just the accurate passing and keeping playing keep away, as Kevin put it on Twitter. But the one thing I would say, like, Brooks Lennon seems to be that attacking threat, seems to be, like you said, probing forward all the time. He reminds me a lot. Granted, he's playing right back, essentially right wing back, reminds me a lot in terms of his play to Tito. Mm-hmm. In that he's running very much on railroad tracks. Like he's running vertically, and that's, I don't know if that's just how he's been deployed. I want to pull up this heat map, at least personally. I won't share the screen or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, his heat map is literally just that right side of the field in front of the 50. So he's just running on straight lines, which is fine. His service, I think, has to get a little better. I think, honestly, it's a little lacking, but I don't know. It's, I think Felipe had put it right where we don't really have the guy right now to make that quick turn and connect the play from the
midfield. Missing Barco to do that.
That's exactly. Mm-hmm. He's saying, you know, Barco is the guy who was doing that. And I think that's why we're seeing that lack of that right now. And I think that we're getting so frustrated is because we don't have that guy with a great first touch to be able to not just control the ball and turn and look for somebody to be, but be able to immediately make a play on the ball and be able to connect it into the attack. And
it's been a couple of times that you've seen like the first touch when I remember, I think it was last week, Joseph would receive a pass, but his first touch was too heavy. And the same has happened with Lopez. So I think, you know, it's everyone.
Speaking of being heavy-handed, I would be remiss.
How is that a good segue? What kind of segue is that? Heavy-handed?
About not being heavy-handed.
What? No? About being gentle, Tim?
Yes, about being gentle, like the Lawnmower 4.0. Support your home before dark is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in below-the-waist men's grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped
or
just...
your head, like this.
Or your head, yeah.
Look at that.
Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. MLS is still on 2.0, Manscaped 4.0. You got to get your act together, Don Garber. Get on that 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code HBD at manscaped.com.
Is it weird that Kevin uses it for his head and his balls?
No.
I'm asking the question.
I actually bought, using the promo code HBD, I bought a separate blade because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to go back and forth. That's not a hygienic thing to do. So, which brings me to my next point, which is at manscaped.com, you can go and look at their products. It's not just the trimmers. They've got ball toners and refreshers. They've got body washes, anti-chafing ball deodorant. Who doesn't need that?
The boxers are by far, they sent us a pair of the boxers, by far the most comfortable boxers I've ever had. And I think I told you guys this. It says two things about me, I think. Just how cheap I am when it comes to boxers and just how comfortable these are, because these are kind of revolutionary.
They got the crop mop, which are ball wipes. Who doesn't need that, right? It's like a wet wipe. So take that out on the golf course. Need a little spot shine on your golf ball whenever you step up to the green. Get yourself some of those. Help you out.
That's fancy.
Whatever you're doing, get 20% off and free shipping with the code HBD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code HBD. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
I'm glad I could help you with reminding people that you can get separate blades, Kev.
Yeah. You don't do that. Don't go back and forth.
That's how you get staph infection.
Yeah. You don't do that.
Yeah, you don't do that.
And then this make it is easy the to special quite... hat episode of H before D, by the way.
Can I? So are we done with the ad?
Yes.
Okay. Can I go over to? So Michelle was saying, doesn't playing it back reset the play? And she's absolutely right. It absolutely does reset the play. The frustrating thing that I'm seeing is there either aren't any options to play it forward. So the only option, like Michelle was saying, is to just play it back, which is frustrating. The other thing is you can see options on the screen.
Exactly. Exactly.
And people and players are either choosing it to pass it back or choosing to pass it to a less dangerous spot, which is right. Driving me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that, and I don't think all that's going to be remedied with Barco in the lineup. I mean, we'll certainly see. Do we have any kind of an update on his injury or a timeline?
Nope. I haven't heard anything.
I haven't seen anything either. Tim, you mentioned, and this will be kind of a deviation from the conversation. You mentioned Felipe's comments about Barco. Have you guys, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it since it came out the day after we recorded last week, and we don't have to get into it. Every other podcast has already done so, but Felipe's article with The Athletic that came out last week about Carlos Bocanegra and the state of the front office with Atlanta United, maybe just your overall thoughts, and we've got to talk about it. What were your thoughts on the article and the comments that he made about Carlos Bocanegra?
It's certainly the elephant in the room right now, right? Like, and it's not, it's hard for me to say that it's all conjecture because it was corroborated by so many, albeit, you know, anonymous sources. It was pretty sad. I mean, to Brittany's standpoint, the whole thing about Bielsa might be the most disconcerting thing about the entire article, right? The fact that Marcelo Bielsa seemed like he was ready to come to Atlanta United and Bocanegra just left him hanging. And now he went over, took Leeds, and now they're mid table in Premier League. And he's, I don't know. It's crazy. It seems like amateur hour. Like if everything that was in that is, you know, is factual, which I don't know. And I don't pretend to know, but like that, it seems more than likely. And, I don't know. It says a lot about the front office and just kind of the mishandling of a lot of things seem to be pointing right at Carlos Bocanegra. And maybe that's why Paul McDonough was brought back.
But my thought about that is it that way? Or is that just the way that the article was written? And I say that because I think that that's the other framework that you have to put in here, because I think that while there's a lot of valid points, and I think it's going to, Carlos is going to be hard pressed to keep his title going into next season. I think kind of the public outcry is probably going to get the best of him, particularly how that seemed to take place with the Frank DeBoer firing, it seems like, and especially if it starts to filter into the locker room and so many players having opinions on it. But my point on it is, it was an entire article that literally just focused on one employee. And I think you're going to be hard pressed to find any employee in any organization at any level that 100% does their job completely efficiently and has zero mistakes and a proven track record where everything is by the book. Like, while the Bielsa thing is a huge deal, and I know that like there was a comment about like it was Carlos's job to follow up with him, but like you would think it a massive organization somebody else would have, and it's like, I don't know, that equates to me like not following up on an email or something like that, you know? Like, it just seems like such a one-off thing where I think the writing's kind of on the walls for him next season, and I don't think he's going to stick around potentially, and there's certainly a lot of other discouraging information in that article, but I don't think it's an isolated event where all of Atlanta United's shortcomings are just on him any more so than I thought all of Atlanta's shortcomings last year were under just Frank DeBoer.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Kevin. I think that Felipe is one of the better journalists that we have covering Atlanta United and just soccer in general. I think being bilingual really helps. I think it gives him a deeper understanding. But I do think that he's the fan base will follow him blindly. And that's what I feel like this article has shown. And I'm not doubting work ethic or anything like that. But I agree with you. I think it's one perspective. To the Bielsa thing, I think we dodged a bullet not hiring Bielsa. I think he would not have been great in MLS. I think he gets like the quote that's taken out of the article is like, because Bocanegra didn't call him back. Bielsa told his agent, okay, never accept any more calls from them. I mean, that's kind of a red flag there. If you're going to go off like that because someone didn't call you back. And I mean, there have been job interviews I've gone on that I thought have gone great. And I never got a call back. And I end up calling and saying,
exactly,
hey, remember me? You know, we had that thing. Yep. Okay. Yep. Oh, you've just hung up on me. Okay. That's fine. Right. And I realized that it's not nowhere near as high profile as what they're trying to do with Atlanta United. I just kind of feel like a lot of it's been taken out of context. A lot of it is from anonymous sources. And I'm sure Felipe talked to whomever, and obviously they wanted their identity kept. But it's, again, the counter argument, it's an anonymous source. I mean, I've got 10 anonymous sources on what Kevin did last night. So... So I think
it was just me and you there. So I don't know how you found all these other people.
Well, I can corroborate it. So
I feel like there's, yeah, I think it puts some more pressure on Bocanegra, whether he really cares about it, whether the front office, you know, care about it as much. I mean, I know Darren was interviewed on 92.9. I never got to hear the actual audio from that, but he was pretty irritated with the article. And I think in either way, you're still an outsider expressing an opinion on something that you weren't in the room for. That's kind of like sports in general, really, commentating on sports. So,
I'll play counter to this because I get what you guys are saying. And I've had that reaction to kind of going back and forth with this whole thing. Mm. And it's not just one side of the story. When it's 10 against one, it's not one side of the story. I mean, it's majority of the organization, not the majority of the organization, because it's, you know, the organization's more than whatever, 20 people, but it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like the people that went on record, or not even on record, but the people that went to talk to Felipe and mm-hmm. gave him this account. That's a lot more people that have come that, then have come out to deny it or to come out and to even correct any of it. And I think that part's it, but again, like Felipe is, and I don't begrudge him for this. I think he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do because if you look at any of the high profile, so look at the highest profile guys in each of the leagues. I don't follow NHL. So I don't know who the Adrian Wojnarowski or Sham Sarania or Adam Schefter of the NHL is, but there are guys that get legitimate news before everybody else, never put a source to it or never put it like a name to a source. But they're entirely credible. And I, unless it comes out that those sources were not credible in the way that they are, in the way that they were coming out to Felipe, then I have no reason to believe that Felipe is just like making this up or twisting things or portraying it in any way that isn't just laying out the facts of, you know, what he got. So I don't know.
No, I completely agree. And I don't think it's just like talking about the game, right? And maybe this kind of gets us back on board with talking about the match again. Like, I don't think that entire article or all of the actions of Carlos Bocanegra are entirely positive or entirely negative. And I don't think that his entire tenure at Atlanta United can be summarized as entirely positive or entirely negative as a result. And I certainly don't think that article was structured in a way that you can read it and say, okay, everything he's done is terrible. I mean, even the stuff that was written in there, like certainly some of it was more damning to him or his tenure and what his involvement is in the club, just as much as we can talk about Bielsa's involvement being overstretching. And I think Brian or somebody mentioned like the fact that he wanted to have so much control over thing, or Kevin Escobar, it's a red flag to ask for full control over the roster as well. Like, especially coming into MLS with everything that's involved in the league. Like, and like Dan said, I think that we ended up on the positive side of that, all things considered, with Tata coming in. It's the other stuff, like the contracts and players slipping through the cracks and stuff like that, that's a little bit more frustrating. But I don't think it's entirely one way or the other. But unfortunately, because he was singled out and the court of public opinion is going to be involved, I think it's going to be a hard challenge for him to overcome it as a result of it. So,
yeah, I think Octavio Mingura, his comment, the more infuriating excerpt is how Boca bungled the Darlington contract extension. Absolutely. When I read that, I was like,
yeah,
seriously, you promised him that? And then just were like, we're not
gonna. And it's not like he underperformed. It's not one of those things where you brought a guy in and you were like, okay, we'll give you a tier extension. And then he was, you know, whatever, didn't live up to anything. And you're like, okay, well, we didn't really put pen to paper, so sorry, you didn't work out. It was maybe the most crucial part of this team outside of Joseph Martinez, a healthy Joseph Martinez, was Darlington Nagbe. Like, I mean, we keep talking, how many weeks in and out of, you know, offseason have we talked about the Nagbe replacement? And finally, it took us, you know, a year and a half, and I think we might actually have one.
Yeah,
sure. I think it's different systems, but I mean, Nagbe was so crucial to De Boer's system in just shutting down attacks, turning it over, and getting it back up the field. And to not keep those promises is ridiculous.
Does that does it say anything to you guys about, like, sorry to cut you off, Kevin, I'm just thinking about, like, the sentiment behind FDB out, and not, he's not our coach, but, like, it seemed like he was in the dark about so many decisions. Like, how much of, like, him not having any control over the roster, he doesn't have his guys, right? Like,
and that's the other flip side of this, is that, like, just as much as I mentioned Bielsa wanting too much control, the opposite can hold true, where Bocanegra can be overstepping the manager's role within the club. And, like, there's got to be checks and balances, and he's certainly overstretching, and that can be just as insidious to the locker room as a bad manager that doesn't have that culture instilled in the roster. So,
yeah, I think that in the other leagues, it's more common, and teams will willingly give coaches full roster control. But in, like, I think to your point, I mean, the MLS, I mean, imagine Marcelo Bielsa dealing with Gam and Tam, and he's like, what do you mean you can't sign that player because you don't have enough imaginary money? What, what are you talking about? What did I sign up for? So,
yeah, I could just imagine him waving his hands like that. Like,
I mean, even Felipe interviewed De Boer after he left, and De Boer was like, well, they sold Pity completely from under me, which, I mean, I feel like most of the fan base was fine with that one. And then
it was Gressel that was more shocking to him.
Then, you know, we didn't have any wingers. So it's like, well, what can I do? So that was unfortunate. You know, we were not far away from an MLS Cup final.
That was really the best part that came out of all this, which is all the memes and the tweets about it. You know,
did you make that one that you sent us, or did you find that somewhere?
No, all of those were on Twitter. So, like, the Boca out, which is the re-logo from the cookout logo with his hair as the, like, flaming spatula, basically. He wasn't the villain all along, and it's pulling the mask off of Frank De Boer, and it's really Carlos Bocanegra underneath it. And then somebody doing the Felipe really came in this morning with the, and it was the thank you Atlanta United banner with Carlos Bocanegra on there. So it was just all of that stuff was the best thing that came out of everything there.
No, great. Yeah. It was pretty great to see that. But at the same time, you know, it's crazy, and maybe it's good for this team, is they have a scapegoat, right? If they ever wanted, and maybe it was leaked, maybe this stuff was leaked for a reason. I don't want to get conspiratorial, but I mean, there's, when you have a front office that is consistent of not just a technical director, but, like, what is Darren Eels president, right? And they both kind of share GM duties in a, like, a traditional sense. Am I wrong in that? Like, they, and Paul McDonough at this point too. So you have three guys that could potentially be the fall guy for roster decisions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if those roster decisions don't pan out, it looks like we do have our scapegoat. And maybe, again, like to put tinfoil hat on, maybe, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility for stories to leak from the front office to the press to kind of set that up. But I mean, yeah, it's so
back to the roster from this weekend.
Hold on, one sec. Oh, one sec. Come on. See, I think Brian Diefenberg actually makes a really good point. Do you think we would get this reporting from Jason and Mike down here?
Nobody else here in Atlanta is doing that kind of stuff.
So people criticize them about they pump their sunshine pumpers. They only think about one way. But I mean,
they're employed by the team.
I don't think they're employed by United.
They're employed by the radio station who has the contract for play-by-play. So right. It's like it's not like The Athletic, which is a subscription-based, independent journalistic institution that's supposed to just report on, and maybe that's not even, I mean, I don't even, I didn't mean to cut you off. I don't know if you're going to make this point, but Jason and Mike aren't reporters, right? They're not, they're commentators and announcers, broadcasters. They're not doing the investigative work that Felipe is on a daily basis.
I mean, they're not investigative reporters, but I think they're still, I mean, I think they're still journalists. I mean,
well, Jason, yes, broadcast journalists. Like, I mean,
I think Jason.
We aren't.
No, we're not. I just think that, I mean, the body of work that Jason Longshore puts out is just, I don't know how the guy
it's
has
prolific.
Time to do
it. It's prolific beyond prolific, right? I mean, it's, and I wasn't saying any of that to disparage what Jason and Mike standings are to the team or to the community or anything like that. But I just think they have different roles in what they're doing. And I think you should expect to have different results from what they're doing. I'm not saying Jason's not a journalist. I think that's, if I did say that's an absurd thing to say, it's not what I was getting at.
No.
I don't know if you put those words in my mouth. I was just saying he's not an investigative journalist like Felipe is.
My fault, Tim. Whoa. No, I'm just kidding. I think they do a great job of, the content that they put out. I do think they're company men though. I mean, they have a lot more to lose if they criticize the team too harshly or kind of help speculate on that.
Well, it sounds like they did address it and neither were happy with it, according to Michelle and Coach Steve. So
yeah, they weren't happy about it, but Felipe is doing his job. That's what we need to see. You know, I went real back and forth on the article. I didn't know how to think about it. But I think, you know, you've got to take a pinch of salt with that. That's why, you know, you can't just have one political opinion and then just follow that. You've got to understand the arguments from both sides. So have more than one source.
That's more than a drop down.
Will Boron, I wouldn't call Doug an investigative journalist either.
No, and I agree with that completely. I think he's there to, he's a beat writer, right? I mean, that's his role. Like, he's a beat writer. He's there to just ask questions and take them down. He's not, I mean, the story that Felipe produced is like, it's like a Rolling Stone style investigative report. Like, that's, I mean, it was impressive to say the least. It's not the first time he's been that impressive.
Nothing like what we do here, which is just get Hockey. Together, drink, and shoot the shit. So back to the match. What are you guys thinking about Joseph Martinez? He's gotten more involved over recent weeks, and certainly this week where he almost got on the end of a couple of headers that go away. We saw him get the goal last week, obviously. But week in and week out, to me, he's certainly seeming to get better and better. And we're getting pretty close, I think. Maybe another four to six weeks, he might look, you know, some semblance of his former self, but he's showing sparks of it at the very least.
So are we looking for him to come, like, are we expecting him to be 17, 18 types of numbers? Or
I don't think so.
Kind of because expecting more of the under the Frank DeBoer era?
I think under Frank DeBoer, because, I mean, you got to think, like, also under Frank DeBoer, the distribution network that he had, whether it was Miguel or with Julian Gressel, neither one of those are there. And not only has he been out of the lineup, but also the roster changes and the distribution network has changed again on him. So it's like that has to get in alignment with him just as much as his own footing and, you know, playmaking ability. But I would just like that header, you just expect to go in. under his normal run of form. You know, other touches that's just, like you said, like in a couple of times, his first touch is just very heavy footed. And it's like, you expect some of those things to be a little bit different.
But can I just say that those are, he's not getting as many opportunities, and those missed opportunities that you're seeing are the same ones that he had in the games in 17, 18 and in 19, where he just has so many more opportunities from the distribution that he's getting that he's putting other ones away. Like it's a numbers game at this
That's
point. You
point.
Can't expect a striker to have that big of a, that high of a conversion percentage. It really, to me, I don't, his pace maybe is the only thing I see that he hasn't got back, but I mean, somebody mentioned it, Octavio Mingura saying Joseph is getting better, played the full 90 last minute. His endurance is there. His vertical is definitely still there somehow with that recovered ACL. Like his work ethic is fucking phenomenal. The way that he's coming back and recovering for people and being able to trying to play the Barco role in that lack of a Barco role, being able to, you don't normally see a number, I wouldn't say you would see a number nine doing hold up play that far into that far back towards their own half. But I honestly think everything's there. I think he is just missing the opportunities and the chance creation to really put anything behind the keeper.
And I think the defenders are picking up on it because they were trying to put him in a chokehold at one point this past weekend. It's like, my God, like if he's testing that knee every bit of it, every single game, it seems like, because defenders aren't giving him a pass.
Mm-hmm. And that's good because we should see more goals from other areas of the field.
Right.
I mean, Birkenegro was saying that, you know, we're trying to build a team that's not so dependent on Joseph. I mean, because that's what Frank de Boer was trying to do too. He was trying to get other outlets. But Tata was like, the focal point is Joseph. Get the ball to Joseph. And like you're saying, he doesn't have as many opportunities. The transition is nowhere near as absolutely breakneck and chaotic as it was under Tata. And, you know, and that's really just scared opponents with having like four or five guys just sprinting as hard as they can down at you. So.
Yeah,
you know, they've got more time, unfortunately, now.
But the other side of it, Tim, I think, is while I agree it's a numbers game, right? Like he's only as good as the service he's given. But as he gets more comfortable and on the end of more of those opportunities, the better his service is going to get and the more frequent that service is going to get, because players are going to know that he's going to be able to get up and get that pass. And it doesn't need to be at his feet, or it doesn't need to be in this. It, like they can lead him a little bit more because his pace is a little bit more consistent with what he's consistently been able to do in the past, or he can lead defenders a little bit more. Like all of those things are going to lead to additional service as a result. So I think those things are kind of mutually exclusive. So
yeah, and I think to that point too, his gravitational pull, as it were, for defenders to open up space and to open up lanes, I think will increase too, now that, you know, they're starting to see him back to his normal self. I mean, I think you see it already, like you were talking about them mauling him, and I think he's going to start commanding more double teams in the box and commanding more, I don't know, being able to feint and pull defenders off, or have multiple defenders pull onto him and be able to open up those lanes. And you'll start seeing that more often, I think, and it's going to hopefully create more opportunities for this team.
Yeah, to Will Bolron's point, I mean, we've faced teams that are all in at least playoff position, except for Chicago Fire. And as we go on, we've got obviously Seattle, then Nashville after that, then Philadelphia, NYCFC, and then Red Bulls, and then Chicago Fire. I mean, that's a pretty
rough stretch, man.
Kind of schedule. But then the thing is, after we play Chicago Fire, it's Nashville, New England again, and then FC Cincinnati, and that's towards the end of July. So it's, I mean, it's a lot. This first half of the season is pretty intense, and you know, we need that.
Yeah.
All right. Hot button.
I like this.
Yeah, because do we have any idea other than form, why, and just a tactical substitution? I mean, not even tactical, it's like for like. It was not.
No, Franco was, they said on the broadcast, Franco started. He was injured.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. He was injured. Sorry. I missed that. We didn't have the commentating up very loud. That was, anyway.
But, I mean, we did score a goal when Walks was on the field, so.
It's true. So what do you guys think, though? Kevin, I mean, Alan Franco or Anton Walkes, given you've seen enough sample size probably from both of them at this point?
I think that Franco is a little bit more of a liability as far as his aggression. And I still haven't seen enough of the offensive playmaking ability. And as much as I hate to say it, I think Dan's right. Like, Walkes has made
One more time.
Shut up. I still think that both of these, I don't think that you're going to have a decision either way because of what Dan said. Like, Walkes has made a big enough impact that you do have competition at the position. And like, while I think that Franco will continue to find his footing and potentially end up being that player that you expect to have that starting role, I just don't think it's been long enough. And I don't think he's found his footing enough, but I don't think that he's a detriment in the lineup by any stretch.
I mean, it's great to have all that depth. I mean, Franco should be that guy. I will be really surprised if he's not the guy in the second half of the season, unless there's some sort of injury that prevents him from doing that. But he hasn't shown out great. I find it's weird that he's a DP.
That was going to be my comment.
It's weird that he's a DP because his transfer was only like a few million.
Yeah.
And then his salary isn't as much.
It's TAM level, right? Did they do it just to get? Did they do that DP designation just to like get the whatever you call it, the kickback or the ease or like rebate on a salary? Not rebate. What am I trying to say? The subsidy, right?
Maybe it's but the thing is, so Will Barron's point, Franco getting brought down as a TAM player in the summer window so we can pick up another offensive DP. So we got Joseph Barco and Franco as our DPs because we bought down Moreno. Mm-hmm. So I just don't understand why we bought down Moreno rather than Franco, because it theoretically it would have cost less money to buy down Franco. Though I guess there's something I'm missing, but it doesn't matter. I'm fine with him getting bought down in the summer. I mean, hopefully we'll have more.
Have two spots at that point, probably.
I mean, yeah, probably.
Hopefully for all parties involved, it is. Again, because I just want to see him move on and do great things. And right now, we're talking about.
I just don't know, man. If he doesn't start getting some play time, I don't know if he goes in the summer window because I don't know if there's going to be enough interest. Like, when does the window open? Oh,
there'll be a suitor.
Somebody, I'm sure, but not at the value that Atlanta's looking for.
No, we'll be selling him for cost. But the thing is, we'll want to sell him because his contract runs out at the end of the season. No.
And then so you can tell me I was right that he's not $30 million player.
Well, he's probably
one and one, baby. One and one.
Last year, obviously, to Dan's point, if his contract runs out at the end of the year, he would have been a much higher transfer fee if he would have been bought last year than this year. Because what do? Either you buy him during the summer transfer window or you wait and sign him on a free, right?
But then, you just take the risk. Like, this could really be him coming together. But if he's injured and if he goes back to the Olympics, he's just not going to have the time.
So back to the discussion topic, looks like most of the trap is saying Walkes, Richard Gordon. I never noticed when Franco is in. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I mean, I think it's pretty good as far as it relates to a defender. You know, he's not constantly a standout or a liability. Will Barron of the opinion that Franco was a panic third choice at center back. They had to pick someone. They had to pick up someone, so they threw money at the problem. Gabriel Lajas, we will see Franco and Walkes if Robinson gets called. That's a good point that with Walkes or with Robinson.
For the Gold Cup.
Right. Well, even, you know, looking at long-term solutions, like Robinson seems to be our – you know, highest trajectory defender right now, as far as how long do you keep a player like him in the lineup? And maybe that's why you bring in a Franco or something like that, is knowing that like that could be the wild curve ball in the transfer window for some reason, like Robinson goes or something like that, because he's consistently being a standout in this lineup. So,
yeah, I could even see him going this summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bello. Yeah. I mean, we might have to replace a left back in the summer.
Speaking of left backs, did you see the first goal scored in the new Miami Stadium was by your boy Breck Shea?
I saw the box score. I did not. I wasn't watching the match.
Yeah.
It seemed like there was a lot of hate watching going on by the Atlanta United faithful of that Inter-Miami match. It was very interesting. Twitter was abuzz with people watching that game, and no other reason than to just hope nothing good happened, right?
Yeah.
I love me some Breck Shea, as you guys know. So
he's got that beautiful blonde mullet going on now.
It's very much it's just a straight mullet. He just said, fuck it.
I didn't understand his Phantom of the Opera celebration. He does some weird hand thing over his face. I didn't know what he was trying to say.
The symbiote.
It's very confused.
He's celebrating the Carnage and Venom.
I don't know if it was like
trailer
commentary on masks and COVID. I don't know.
No, it's
speaking of COVID. Well, we didn't go to the match, but those that did, what were your thoughts with first full attendance match at Mercedes-Benz? We didn't talk about that like this was the return to a maximum capacity, not maximum capacity, but full attendance game. They had what, 40,000, and the highest attendance since the start of COVID for a soccer match internationally.
Yeah.
No, nobody's going to touch on.
Okay, great. Just,
I mean,
forget it.
I am happy to see things go back to normal. I feel like I'm just so worn down with COVID and everything. I'm really happy to see it going back. Yeah. I know there's a whole bunch of like people aren't happy with it, and there's, you know, calling it a super spreader event and everything. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that could be the case. More people could get infected of COVID. But I think what it comes down to is personal choice. If you are worried about getting COVID, then you don't go. And if you're not that worried about it, or you're kind of worn down by it, by me, I'm vaccinated, so I'm kind of ready to be done with it all and take the risks as they are.
And the team made good on it. Like, that was what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, was that a lot of the fans got blindsided by this. All of a sudden they're at full attendance, but they did give fans the option to opt out for just May if they wanted to, and I saw that they could opt out for the entire season, which I think, Tim, you guys opted out for the season, right?
No, we haven't. They didn't give the option in the email.
Oh, I thought they did. Okay.
No,
sorry.
It was like special circumstances. We ended up just selling our tickets for the first game. Yeah, it's difficult for us. I mean, I don't know. You see so many conflicting reports about it. And I don't know. I'm fully vaccinated. Angie's fully vaccinated, but she is also pregnant and late term right now. So she's immunocompromised and nobody knows what that means.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. She needs to stay home.
My circumstances are very different. So I will not be attending matches, nor will she. And, but I mean, it, I don't know. It's weird because it seems so, what is the word I'm looking for? Taboo to see that now.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just the point of we've reached very high vaccinations and then give people the personal liberties that the Constitution grants them and just deal with whatever ramifications. It's your personal, like, I mean, every building in Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, has pretty much had that notice on the door that says, if you get COVID and die from being in this building, it's your own fault. So take your health into your own hands, or it's your health is your own responsibility at that point. And I guess that's what we're rolling into, because people have the choice to either do it or not. I don't know. It's weird. It's definitely foreign. It's like how much this has conditioned us over, like Brian says, which is awesome. He's an ICU nurse. So he's happy to see this. It's been a rough 17 months. I agree. It's weird to see. It's good to see, but it also seems soon. I don't know.
The other thing that I liked, and Octavio mentioned it, that they had the vaccination sites set up at the tailgates and inside Mercedes-Benz, which was awesome. And then props to Mateo. He's got his buddy to get his first shot at the tailgate, which is awesome. The other question I had was, do you guys, and Will, you guys in the trap will let us know. My understanding is the Gulch is shut down for tailgates now. And so is all the tailgates at the Home Depot backyard. What's going on? Like, where are the supporter groups tailgates occurring at now, because everything's so different than the last time we were there because of everything happening in the Gulch development. I don't know where and how things are happening as far as tailgates go now, but yeah. So
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Tim, when little Rosemary Herb comes, you're not going to give a fuck about going to Atlanta United games.
No, Marjoram. Yeah, Marjoram Herb. Yeah,
Marjoram Rosemary.
Yeah, Rosemary's the middle name. Yeah,
gotcha.
Marjoram Rosemary Herb. Yeah.
So is it time for the Dan load?
It's the Dan load.
Unless you guys have any, other thoughts about the?
It's a special report. We got the Dan load.
Any other thoughts about the Montreal game? We're good on that, right? I think we covered it for the most part, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we're coming up on an hour, so.
Atlanta United are gonna get fucking killed by Seattle Sounders. Oh my god! The number of possessions lost per game is 146 by Seattle and 116 by Atlanta. So maybe that gives you a little bit of a chance that maybe Atlanta might pull this off. But with Brian Schmetzer just molding stuff together and changing formations, putting little tweaks in there, just destroying everyone in front of him, we're gonna get killed.
I've never been more proud to have you a part of this broadcast than I am right
now. So the goal conversion from Seattle is 21%, which is pretty incredible. Atlanta United is 13. So, you know, that's kind of like a good brings shots to goals and everything. They're scoring 2.2 goals a game to our 1.2 goals a game. And tell you what, they've got an absolute killer in Rory Diaz, who's probably my favorite Seattle Sounders player because he just goes off all the time. And Will Bruin, that guy's never going to die. He just keeps on producing and being a guy who they can rely on, which is really annoying. Every time, I mean, Seattle, you can never write him off anytime. It's annoying. We wrote him off at the beginning of 2020 and they came back and made it to the final. And so they just keep on showing up. They've showed up since, when was the last Seattle Sounders Toronto MLS Cup final? They've been, they had two together. They've won one apiece.
It was two years ago. Yeah.
Highly, highly annoying. Christian Roldan's really cemented himself as the linchpin of this team. He's scoring goals. They just rely on him to put it together. And annoyingly enough, Alex Roldan, his 1 year younger brother, is killing it. I mean, he's a young kid. He actually played in goal when Stephen Fry went off injured when against the game before last. He came in, all the subs had used, it's like the 89th minute, Stephen Fry got injured. He did his knee in. He put the gloves on and made like four or five different saves. Plus, he's an incredible right back. He's getting up and down the wing. His form in the past two games has been like 7.9, 7.6, which is he's in top-notch form. And I usually think form goes for at least maybe 3 to 4 games. I'd be surprised if he doesn't have a good game against Atlanta. Also, Arriaga and Yamar. Yamar's been holding down. He's kind of like their Miles Robinson type guy. He's just been sweeping everything up. And then they have another incredible center back in Nuhu. I think someone was joking on Twitter that they would someone was talking about trading Rossi from LAFC for Nuhu, and they'd be like, yeah, that'd be fine. They just need to throw in Vela as well, and then it would be parody. They seem to just mold to whoever they're playing against. The stats are kind of all over the park depending on what team they're playing. So there's no real like defined style that you can pinpoint them on. So I expect that Atlanta United is going to just play our usual high possession based game, and they will eventually find ways to break it down, whether they need to press or whether they need to not press. My guess is they're probably going to do what most teams have done against us and jam the midfield and then just kind of like put a wedge between us all and push the wingbacks back. So we're going to be pinned inside our own half, making backwards passes most of the time, what's going to happen. They're going to be pressing more. They're pretty good on interceptions. They're one of the highest teams in interceptions, and they will probably just jump on errors and probably get a few goals that way. I'm not looking forward to this. I'm probably going to watch this one behind my couch. So I am going to just end this and say we're probably going to get – it's in Seattle as well. That doesn't bode well for us. We've never won there. I don't think we've ever beaten the Seattle Sounders. I think we've got a draw, and that's been about it. I'm going to go with 2-0 loss.
And this has been the download.
I like it. Some that thoughts was... from the trap. Michelle hoping that we could please pump a little sunshine. I'll at least say that Atlanta's going to score one goal, but I still think it's a 3-1 loss to Seattle and our lone goal coming from Joseph Martinez. Will Bowron saying that they absorb the pressure from the high press really, really well. And if we don't score in the first 20 minutes, we're going to lose 3-0. Brian Diefenbach wishing that we had Nuhu. When you watch Seattle play like they did the other night, oh my God, their defense is so good. Nathan Explosion, Seattle is scoring at least 2 goals. Pretty us just get to the inevitable. We're going to get railed.
I like how it's like still train themed for Atlanta United.
toot, am I right? Bello is going to get exposed multiple times if he gets caught out of position. So is it possible that maybe we make an adjustment? No losses here. 1-1. I don't care. I'm hopeful, says Brittany S. Gabriel Lajas, 3-0 Atlanta. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Elliot Beaven also 1-1. Yes.
Pretty early on.
Yep. Michelle, 1-1. I'll be happy with the draw on the road. That all brings me to you, Tim, because all the pressure's on you as someone who hasn't had a single point yet this season. What are you thinking? I feel like the easy bet here is to if you call a Seattle win and we fucking pull it out somehow.
Yes, do it, Tim.
Well, you guys will be happy to know that the game that I'm thinking of and I have PTSD from is the away game in Chicago in 2019.
Oh, God. What was that? 3-0 us? Or they beat us? Was that 3-0?
It was 5-0. It was 5-0.
Oh, it was 5-0. That's right. That's right. Oh, that's so awful.
It was 5-0 at halftime, if I'm not
mistaken.
That's
right. That's right.
We drew. We drew the second half, but, you know, positives. Positives of positives and negatives, which we'll get to from the Twitter reactions. But I hate to do this. I'm going to have to say 3-0 Seattle. They are, like, by and large, to Dan's point, like, Brian Schmetzer is, say what you will about the man, he's a masterful tactician whenever it comes to MLS. I mean, he's
better than Bruce Arena.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, his ability to deploy tactics specifically to the teams that they're playing and to, I think it was Will's point, talking about them just waiting until the second half, absorbing pressure and then just barreling past their opponents. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't feel good about it. I'm going to say 3-0 Seattle. Raul Ruiz Diaz, if you talk about a guy who does not.
He embarrassed us the last time we played them, too. That little chip over on the back line and just slotted it home. Oh.
And I will say, since I think this is his third year at Seattle, I have not seen him play better than he's playing right now, too. And that's scary. Like the supporting cast that he has around him. Oh man, it's going to be tough. And to Dan's point, seeing the other Roldan brothers start to, I have a hard time, and I can't finish sentences right now. I have a hard time believing that they're not going to win MLS Cup at this point. Like, I feel like looking at years past, how many times they made it to the MLS Cup final, starting off really shitty. And the fact that they're already firing on all cylinders going into the sixth match of the season is, it doesn't feel good to me. I just want to pull some positives and negatives out of that game, but
How about LAFC right now, bottom of the West? Who saw that coming? I mean, Vela hasn't been healthy, right? Wasn't this his first game back after an injury or something like that? I think I saw. But, yeah, they're sitting bottom of the West right now. Chicharito continues to light things up over there. Galaxy's sitting second in the West, Seattle. But they're playing pretty well, all things considered, as well. So,
yeah.
Seems like West is pretty stacked comparatively.
What was your prediction, Kevin?
3-1 Seattle with Joseph scoring the lone goal from Atlanta. So all three of us predicting a Seattle win. 3-0 for Tim, 2-0 for Dan, 3-1 for me.
Okay. So when you look at the odds on this, Seattle are -154 and Atlanta United are +400. And then it says, when the odds are +400, the expected chance of winning is 20%. But this team, Atlanta United, all actually wins 1% matches with these odds.
Shit.
I mean, it's
does it give you a line? Like, what's the score? Like, what's the score line? Does it have that on there, or just the odds? For
It's just the odds that I'm looking at.
I gotcha. I just didn't know if they gave like a goal differential that.
But you think about all the breakdowns in chemistry that I'm trying to excuse all the time, and the errant passes. You know they're just gonna ram it down our throats.
Oh yeah, well because Atlanta doesn't want to turn. I mean, if Atlanta plays like they did this past week, which you expect them to, at least they're not going to just completely break the mold and not play like they did this past week. But if they're consistently not even turning to look at space or take those opportunities, Seattle's going to shut that down with a high press really, really quickly. And Atlanta, unfortunately, just doesn't have enough pace or players on the opposite end to run a quick counter if they happen to get some sort of a recovery. Or players that seem to want to take that on in recent weeks. So I don't have a good feeling about this week at all.
So we do have, so
Brian says, I predict that we have 80% possession and they have twice the amount of shots that we do.
That we need that first half performance against Philadelphia. That we have.
Yes.
And we need to also have the 2018 Campione's Cup performance rolled into that as well. Yeah. And then I think we could potentially win 1-2-1. But it's
going to be a grind. It is going to be a grind. Like if Atlanta wins, it's not by multiple goals. And no. Seattle's putting at least one in. So best thing, like if Atlanta wins, it's 2-1 at like best case scenario, in my opinion. Like there's no way Atlanta gets a shutout against this team. And it's going to be a fucking grind to get that to happen.
Yeah.
It's tough. I would be remiss if we didn't go back and look at the, we got a couple positive and negative reactions on Twitter to the Montreal game.
I'll try to be better about the pacing next episode. I always forget about those. And then we end up doing them at the end instead of we're transitioning into this.
So, Gabe # Sosa Squad 5 Lajas, AKA Gully Cuban 13 saying, positive Mulroney on the left, negative passing backwards to Kevin's point earlier. Yeah, you're right. It would definitely work better. If we read these earlier, Elliot Beaven saying positive Moreno scored, negative Kubo did not play. Just kidding. And then from Pierce Hicks, AKA Cursive Kid.
What if Kubo scores a brace to win?
That would be incredible.
if Kubo scores a brace, I'll have to do something. I'm not going to get a tattoo or anything stupid like that.
No, you'll have to take out that lawnmower 4.0 and you're going to shave your head live on the show.
No, okay. He'll shave his butt. I was going to say shave his bollocks live on the show.
But... Well, I can't do that. That might be illegal. But we've got to win the game. And Cuba's got a scoring brace for me to shave my head on the show.
It's not illegal. It's just
in this game against Seattle. we're not stretching this out to like the whole season.
You keep drilling into the fine print on this.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We're gonna make sure that this is there's some parameters around this.
And Dan, it's not illegal to shave your bullocks on the show. It is just against the terms of service. Pierce Hicks saying the positive Bello improving. If he can match Lennon's, that would be great. I'm guessing he's being like his Lennon's form. Negative right wing is our weakness. Good on Mulroney for the cross, but him, Dam, and Lopez scare no one because they aren't goal threats. That is absolutely for sure. Ooh, I like Brian's, but this would require me to get into the Atlanta United subreddit.
Full of the Atlanta United. Brian, yeah. How about... Oh, here we go. Here we go. Facebook. Because this is a podcast for the people, by the people, and so much of our content is generated from the trap, Brian, we will do this segment, but each week you have to email us your favorite shit takes from Reddit. And you just email them over to us and we'll run through them during the show.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Put a little onus back on.
Don't make us do more work. You hear us having to... Do you hear Dan's story about his lawnmower experiences last week? We're already doing too much work. He's putting his body on the line for this show.
Week in, week out.
You people just want and want and...
Dan,
my liver enzymes are through the roof because of this show.
Dan almost gave himself a homemade episiotomy for you guys just to prove to you how good the lawnmower
my cholesterol is. Has never been higher than eating after doing these shows.
That's 20% off and free shipping when you use the code HBD at manscaped.com. Do it.
Check us out on OnlyFans too. Just kidding.
No, he's not kidding. Who was it? There was somebody who...
It's OnlyMans. It's OnlyMans.
I'm pretty sure somebody got kicked off of OnlyFans for doing their podcast on it. I'm trying to remember.
Oh my God. It was the five-stripe final, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Have you guys subscribed to five-stripe final's secret Snapchat account? The premium Snapchat account, I think is what I should say. Joe Patrick has... Happy late birthday to that guy. True legend, yeah. Joe Patrick has a premium Snapchat account. See what's behind the curtain.
What does that mean? You got to pay for it?
Uh-huh.
Not yep. gonna pay for it.
No, you're going to pay for it. And then you're going to pay for it.
All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in with us. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us all collectively at Home Before Dark. That's before spelled B and the number 4. I think we're all really just on Instagram, except for Dan, who's also on Peloton. Where can they find you at, Tim?
You can find me at my name. That's Tim Herb, TimHerb.
And what about you, Dan?
You can find me at DNJMS or To the Power of Dan on The Ton, as the kids are calling it.
The Ton? What if they made a Peloton, but it was a Tauntaun?
A Peloton-ton.
Yeah, Peloton-ton.
You don't really have to do any exercise on that. You just ride
no,
it.
No. But it's like the frame of it is a Tauntaun, but you still have the pedals and...
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like a skin that you put on the... It's like those cardboard taxis. You know, it looks like you're driving the taxi, but it's just the shape of a Tauntaun.
I mean, I could do that.
That'd be pretty great.
I'm not going
to
do that.
All right. Tune in next week when you have to watch Dan shave his bullocks live on the show.
Exactly.
Is there another British
on
phrase
the Peloton
bollocks? Am
on,
I using it
on
right?
On the
Dan?
Peloton yeah. at the same time.
His Scotch eggs.
So much sausage. Why is there so much sausage, Dan?
I haven't said a word.
Did you hear the story
this
last
ratio
week?
Ratio is so far off. Is each one of these a pound of meat?
Yeah, I think you need to see the doctor, Kevin.
Didn't you hear his story last week about his heavy genetics?
Yeah, I listened to that back and thought, man, she probably shouldn't have said that. But what you gonna do?
Oh man, God.
Yeah, we're still recording, by the way.
Yeah, really great.
I think everyone's signed off of the trap.
No.
More of this. Find us all on Twitter at Home Before Dark. That's before, so we'll be in the number 4. Leave us ratings and reviews however you found us. If you found us on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Hit that Bill Holcomb icon, the bell icon, to get a notification each and every time we go live, and join all the lovely people in the trap each and every week. Until next time, as always, be home before dark.
I haven't got a really come back because we're going to get destroyed.
Oh, come on!
We're going to go and deafen them.
Deafen them. What?